time for another mock draft breakdown. This time, Michael Waterloo joining me live on the show. He was pick 3 in the draft, so we'll go through his team and then talk about a couple of other guys that we just want to talk about. Let's go balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You're the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. Don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy. That's all that I need.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast, brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I'm your host, Adam King, at AdamKing91 on Twitter. Joining me, as I said, Michael Waterloo, pick 3 in the draft. Thanks for coming on. It's been a little while.
Yeah, happy to be back on. I think it was around this time last year I was on to kind of chop it up with you. So yeah, this was a really fun draft room that we were in, and looking forward to kind of chatting about it a bit.
Yeah, very early. I mean, I was very clear about that. It's sort of 3 months until the start of the season, but good to get a bit of an idea of where players might go. And as I said, you had pick 3. Let me bring that up. So yeah, coincidentally, I've spoken with DMAC, NBA Fantasy Bible, and Noah Rubin, and yourself. So the first 3 picks, and I actually didn't notice that until I checked what pick you had. I guess it'll have to be. And did I think I spoke with Dan Titus as well? Yeah, I think I did. And he was pick 4. So there you go. I've done the first 4 picks. So everyone else, I don't care about them, obviously. First pick. You went with Luka. We've sort of talked, ad nauseum to some degree, about this consensus top 4 of Wemby, Jokic, Luka, and Shai. Happy with Luka there? Like, were you hoping that Jokic would fall, or Wemby? I mean, I don't think Wemby's going to fall past 2, but or were you considering Shai over Luka?
Yeah, it was tough. I always say any year, if there's a clear top X amount of players, I always want that last pick because I'm a coward and I do not want to make the decision for myself. So I'll take the leftover guy and then I get the better pick on the way back. But when I saw pick 3, I was really hoping that Jokic would have fell to me. I'm not going to lie to you. But I figured it'd be Wemby, Jokic 1-2. So I kind of just said, okay, do I want Luka? Do I want Shai? The tiebreaker for me was just kind of a supporting cast. I think the Thunder just keep getting better, keep getting more people there. Shai's an absolute stud. I don't think you can go wrong. The tiebreaker for me was just like, okay, I know I have the clear stud who it's going to be running through him no matter what, every single game. Yes, there's Kyrie there. But to me, it was just kind of the tiebreaker.
Yeah, and I think we saw enough last season from his, like, the free throws have been that concern, I guess, in the past, that he's not necessarily a punt free throw guy, but it was an issue. But I think he was better last year. I don't have his numbers. I should bring up his numbers, shouldn't I, so I can refer to them. But pretty sure he was better last year. And, I mean, it makes sense. A guy as good as him who shoots the ball as well as him should be 80% minimum, I think. So he was at 78.6 last year, which, I mean, it's still not amazing, but considering that was 4% better than anything he'd done previously, do you think he can get up to 80 this season?
You know, it's weird, right? Like, you would think he can, just like you said, the way he shoots, and he can do every single thing else at such a high level that you would think that he can. But I did kind of bake it in whenever I took him, to be honest. Yeah. I was like, okay, you know, like, I don't know if I'm going to have to punt free throws, but I know it's going to be something that, you know, if I have to punt something, that's the first direction I'm going. And I kind of kept that in mind as I went. You can see some of the rest of my team where it's just like, I do not have good free throw shooters. And it was just, okay, I kind of built that base with Luka, understanding that going in. But I would love to be surprised if he could shoot 80%. I think that'd be great.
So Jaren Jackson, you went with pick 22. Third last pick of the second round, coming off a season, I think, where I don't know. I think the whole season for Memphis was basically a wash. We don't really pay too much attention to it. So despite the fact that Jaren Jackson was like 40th or something last year, I want to say, I don't know. I know he wasn't good, was he? Or was he that bad? Maybe he wasn't that bad. I've got to find him now. Jaren. 52, so worse than I thought. So 52, I mean, ranks aren't everything, obviously, but he was coming off the year where he won Defensive Player of the Year and led the league in blocks. And then last year he just wasn't able to play his natural role because they had no offense and he had to score. And he doesn't like to be that primary offensive option, I don't think. So I would assume this season, fully healthy, all these young guys who actually they were able to develop last year because of the injuries, like Vince Williams, who you drafted later in the draft, and GG Jackson and Scottie Pippen, who for some reason remains on a two-way. I think Jaren will get back to being that sort of top 20, top 25 player. So I think this is fine. What's your sort of thought process here with Jaren?
Yeah, I'm always big into kind of buying the dip. And I can't really say this is buying the dip because I took him in the second round. I kind of looked at what was on the board and what I thought the first two teams would do since they had two bigs. You could argue that, like, okay, maybe Jaren would have came back. But I kind of saw the next five guys who went were the next five guys that I wanted. And I said, you know what? I want to have a big and I'll be happy with any of those guards that fall back to me. So that's why I kind of took Jaren. And yeah, it's I don't really understand taking Chet Holmgren over him at this point. Mm-hmm. I think we might see kind of a similar year that Jaren had, a step back for Chet this year. Like, I still like him a lot, but I'd rather have Jaren at the value over Chet. And to your point, the Grizz were just, I think they played, what, 33 different guys last year or something like that?
Yeah.
It was just a mess where you think Ja was out, Desmond Bane was out, Steven Adams lost for the whole year. So the big thing with Jaren is the reason he was Defensive Player of the Year, he was able to roam. He's able to go after those blocks because he had Steven Adams, one of the best offensive rebounders in the entire league, there to kind of be there. Same with like one of the best defensive rebounders right there. So last year he kind of had to play out of position with these young guys and it kind of took away from what he did best. But now you see, you know, they took Zach Edey. You have a healthy Desmond Bane. You have a healthy Ja Morant. It is going to allow Jaren Jackson, who is still very, very young, to kind of return to that kind of player that he was a couple of years ago. So that was kind of my thought process with it. I wanted to kind of lock up a big and I wanted to lock up a defensive master. And I think I was able to do that with him there.
And then your next pick was, so you mentioned at the top of the draft that you went with Luka over Shai because of the fact that the Thunder are getting better. They're building that roster. So there's sort of more to spread around. You took Jalen Williams with your next pick. So that's at pick, what, 27? And last year he finished 40th, roughly. Maybe it was better than that. Why can I not find names today? I don't know what he was.
It's the off-season.
Oh, there we go. 41st. 41st, yeah, overall, in 9K. So you've sort of gone against your theory there with Shai and taken him around ahead of where he finished last year. So what's sort of your thought? I'm assuming you are of the opinion that he can get better.
Yeah, and to me, it's kind of like first-round value versus third-round value there, right? So yeah. If there's a top four, I want to take that guy there. But at this point in the draft, again, I had my tiers, and if I look past where I took Jalen Williams, the rest of the third round is just kind of like, okay, I guess if you're a Lauri Markkanen guy, you could take him there, I guess, if you wanted to. If you believe in Kat, cool. There was talk about Paul George. I didn't really want him in Philly. So to Şengün, if I didn't take Jaren, I would have taken Şengün there. But I really do think that there's another level for Jalen to take. I think he's the number two option on a fantastic Thunder team. I love the versatility. I love the guard forward combo. So that was really big for me too. So I can kind of mix him in and out. And yeah, to me, he was just kind of the clear best player there. And kind of after that, they were all just kind of mixed together for me.
And I think the fact that obviously he wasn't playing a ton down the stretch, but Josh Giddey is gone and Caruso is there, but when you think of those two players, Caruso is really just there for his defense. He can spread the floor. He can handle the ball, but that was basically all Josh Giddey did, was handle the ball, look for assists. And so I think there's a bit of upside there for Jalen Williams to get to 5 assists. He was at 4.5 last year, I think. So he could up that a little bit. And as you said, once you get, the deeper you get into the draft, the less it matters sort of whether you take one guy over another, because the difference in value is not that significant. So even if Jalen Williams finishes the end of the year as the, I don't know, the 33rd ranked player and you took him at 25, who cares? There's not much of a difference there. So coming back, you went fairly safe. Jamal Murray, he was a bit disappointing, I think, to finish last year, probably playing with an injury, playing in the Olympics at the moment, but again, doesn't really look like Jamal Murray. So whether he is still dealing with something there, I'm not sure whether anything has come out about an injury, but he still feels fairly safe at the back end of the fourth round.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, how I mentioned kind of buying the dip. This felt like a perfect example. And yeah, he was definitely playing with an injury in the playoffs. And I kind of wanted to like fade Olympic players. That's one thing I'm keeping a close eye on this year. That's why like somebody like Rudy Gobert makes me kind of nervous to take, and any Timberwolf really, just because of how exhausted they were right into the Olympics end. But, you know, I thought this was a great value for Murray, that he honestly could have belonged in that previous round. Like, if you're asking me, do I want DeJounte Murray or Jamal Murray this year? I want Jamal Murray this year. I would take Jamal Murray over Fred VanVleet also. So for me, it was just kind of like, hey, this felt very safe. I was hoping that a Cade Cunningham or Ja Morant would have fell to me here, but that wasn't in the card. So yeah, I decided just to kind of go with the safe route there.
Fifth round. Now, I like this pick. Jalen Duren, you took at 51, that would be. Yep, 51. Last year, he was the 79th ranked player, in 29 minutes a night. Look, I think Detroit have gotten better this year. They've made some good moves. They finally look like they're sort of attempting to dig their way out of the doldrums. So I think they'll be a better team. Still not a super competitive team in the Eastern Conference, but I think Duren could certainly be upwards of 30 minutes. 30, 31 would, I think, be his floor. Like, I think he's clearly their starting center. Isaiah Stewart no longer playing at the four. We'll just be playing the backup behind him. So I guess, what are you sort of hoping for taking him at 50? And as I said, he was top 80 last year. So he needs to sort of bump up 2 to 3 rounds to break even for you there. Where do you see the improvement coming?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is just having another new coaching staff in there. And especially with JB, the work that he did in Cleveland, I think was really big with the bigs there. So I kind of like that a lot there. And I can see the minutes going up to, like you said, 30, 31 you'll take. I'm hoping for 32. I'm hoping to get him for about 32 a night. Super young, super just dominant with a young team with, you know, they hear everything. They hear everything they're saying. Like, we can't shoot. Are there spacing issues with the team? Absolutely, 100%. But, like, I just think that they're going to be rejuvenated. They have so much talent on that team. And I kind of believe in JB kind of putting it all together for them, and it just can really help in Duren out. So, yeah, he just, to me, really stands out as one of those top centers that were left on the board. You could argue Onyeka Okongwu may have been a better value pick in round 7. I really like the pick from Noah, which I should have locked that in that he was going to take him to begin with. But, yeah, I think, you know, there's top, 36 potential for Jalen Duren. And I was more than happy to get him there in the fifth round.
Yeah, and I think the fact that the Pistons have brought in Tim Hardaway, Malik Beasley, and Tobias Harris, all three of those can spread the floor. Harris, he can shoot threes. He's not a floor spacer as such, but can certainly shoot threes. And I'd much rather have him spreading the floor than Isaiah Stewart. I think that sort of leans into that idea of, yes, Duren is going to play 32 minutes because they're going to put floor spacing around him to allow him to do his thing inside. And I think for me, the improvement in offense, the rebound numbers are there. That will all come. It's really the shot blocking for me, because he was at, where are we? He was at 0.8 last year, 0.9 in his rookie season. I feel like as he's still only 20 as well. So people, you forget how young he is. He won't even be 21 when the season starts. So he's still younger than some rookies. And I feel like as he gets a good coach and a good system and understands the game a bit more, I still think he has upside to be like a 1.5 blocks a game guy, because he's so athletic. So, yeah, I think taking him here, there's a little bit of risk given he hasn't done it yet, but I think the upside is there for him to be, as you said, I think he could be a third rounder if he plays the majority of the season, they're healthy. I think if Cade is healthy, that would play a big role in Duren succeeding. Sixth round, so all the way back to you at the end of the sixth round. Interestingly, you went with Trey Murphy, who I thought last year was primed for a really big season, but then he had that knee injury and it just took him a long time to get going. I think he was slow, but ending the season, he was strong. He went ahead of Brandon Ingram, though, here in this draft. So that's interesting in itself, because Ingram is still there in New Orleans. Whether he stays, we don't know. But I guess what are you thinking here with Murphy? Is this drafting him based on what his role is right now, or are you looking at this as a situation where Ingram potentially isn't there?
Yeah, so I don't want to spoil anything, but I do have Brandon Ingram too. I took him in the next round. So
yeah.
I kind of went into this with the old fantasy football, let's handcuff your running back and get the backup just in case. Whereas, you know, when we did this draft, it was right in the like heat of the, okay, like Brandon Ingram's going to be traded. They got to make a move there. He's the most likely guy. So I'm like, you know what? I think I buy into that. And I'm kind of drafting Trey for what he can be, for the role he can have. Yeah, he was everybody's favorite darling last year in draft season, and then, you know, the injury happened. So, again, I try to look at that, like, where were these P players going last year? What's really changed since then? We see him healthy. It looks like his role is going to be expanding, whether Ingram's there or not. And to me, it just kind of made sense to take him here. He's somebody I really, really, really love. He's somebody I know New Orleans really loves. He's somebody I can really help. I felt like I needed some more threes on my team. I always get nervous after I take a traditional big that I'm like, okay, I got to make up for it. I got to get some more shooting on the team. So for me, I was really, really just happy to take him there. And if Ingram stays on the team, there's a lot of mouths to feed there, but I have no doubt that Murphy's still going to play key minutes for them and still really help out fantasy managers.
Yeah, look, completely agree. You've almost sort of done a reverse handcuff, because in a normal mindset, you'd go, okay, I'll take Ingram and handcuff him with Murphy. You've done it the other way around. And interesting point you bring up there about the taking a traditional big in Jalen Duren and then having to sort of make up that the three-pointers that he doesn't bring you. And I think even 5 years ago, the mindset was you don't really need to get threes early because you can get them late. You can pick up guys like a Malik Beasley or a Gary Trent, these guys in the later rounds who will give you two and a half threes. I don't think that's the case as much anymore, because basically everyone in the league shoots threes and it is pretty rare to draft someone who won't contribute at all in that category. It's really just those centers. And I mean, we're seeing videos at the moment of Yusuf Nurkic slimming down and practicing threes, and whether we see that in the season, that's another discussion, but it isn't as easy to just go, oh yeah, I won't worry about threes. I'll grab them in the last two or three rounds, because basically anyone is drafting is at least getting half a three a game or 0.7 or 1.2. So it is a bit of a change in the game, obviously. So you went with Ingram with your next pick. And I think fairly safe here. I think if he stays, very safe. If he goes, I still think that's a really safe range for him.
Yeah. You know, I went into this with the idea of I'm not going to draft any rookie this year. I don't want any rookies. outside of Wemby last year, we kind of know the statistic about rookies finishing in the top 75. It doesn't really happen. So I like to err on the side of being safe in draft and finding those value picks. And Ingram at this time, he kind of reminds me in a way, not to the extreme, but James Harden last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago, where it's just like, I don't know where, oh no, it was last year. I don't know where he's going to be. I don't know if he's going to play. What do we do with him? Again, it's not that extreme with Ingram, but it was also like people were a little nervous to take him because like anytime somebody's in trade conversations, you're like, I don't know what to do. That's why that reverse handcuff was there. I'm like, I feel like Trey Murphy would go before Brandon Ingram, even though Brandon Ingram's kind of the better fantasy player and player right now. Yeah. But that's kind of why I took him. He just feels very safe. He's a pure bucket getter. He's going to play his game no matter what. That's who he is. I know I'm getting the offense from him. And again, I knew with Durant, I wanted to get those threes because to your point, everybody's shooting threes. So all that means is we need more of them. And I had, you know, I kind of look at my next three picks here and I'm like, I took a hit in three-pointers there. So I'm very glad that I tried to double up with Trey and Brandon there. Like, I just trust them to kind of get the buckets that I need where, you know, the other guys, they have some risk with them there in those areas.
So you said you didn't want to draft rookies, but you have drafted a sophomore, a guy coming into his second season in Scoot Henderson. I don't know. I guess his rookie season was, it was a pass, give him a pass mark. He was okay. He was a little bit better down the stretch. Pretty hard though in a team or on a team like Portland with so many injuries and so many roster changes and DeAndre Ayton, sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. And so hard to get a rhythm, I think, going. So I think taking everything into consideration, I thought Scoot was actually okay last year. And I guess you taking him here in the, what are we in the 10th, eighth round, sorry, not 10th round, in the eighth round, you are envisaging some steps forward from him this season?
Yeah. If it wasn't for Wemby last year, we know that more than likely he would have been the number one overall pick. Talk to Charlotte. They may have different feelings about that, but I just really believe in the talent. And we're so used to, you know, I think when you see somebody like Wemby and just adapt so quickly like he did, it overshadows the other rookies and it kind of puts them in an unfair position and kind of an unfair stigma on them. Again, like, he's also very young. It takes time, especially for guards, to adjust at this level. And I think we started seeing that down the stretch where, you know, he has such a high ceiling. There's some concerns I have with his shot, with his efficiency, with the turnovers, but that comes with a young guard. And I didn't want to take rookies, but Scoot is somebody who was in a tough position last year. It's a team that still has a lot of question marks, but I think we're really going to see the second year leap with him this year.
Yeah. And look, I think, I mean, poor efficiency from a rookie guard is not unheard of. Like, I think it's actually more common. So I'm not too worried there. The turnovers, who cares? Like, we don't really care about turnovers. So I think if you just disregard those two categories, I thought he was okay. And if you look at his last sort of stretch of games over the last month, basically double digits every game. He had a 30-point game, a few 20-point games, four double-digit assist games, multiple steals, I don't know, I want to say 10 times in the last 20 games. He gives you – these threes are a little bit up and down, but that's to be expected. So, yeah, look, I think with Shaedon Sharpe healthy, Anthony Simons healthy, I mean, Jeremy Grant's still there for some reason, but – I'm with you here. Like, I'm not sure. I'm wondering, I guess my question would be, do you think he might have fallen to you in the ninth or 10th round, or do you think people are going to reach up into sort of the 80s or the 90s to get him this year?
So I think that in this draft, he could have fallen to me in the ninth round. I think by the time we get closer to the season, we're going to see him closer to the eighth, the seventh, eighth turn.
Yeah.
So I think right now it may seem like I kind of maybe jumped up around, but he's somebody that I've been targeting in all my dynasty leagues, in all my mock drafts, and all my leagues in general. I want as many Scoot Henderson shares that I can get. So I was okay kind of reaching for him up around. So I think he could have fallen to me, but I also had a feeling that the guy who I took in the ninth round was going to be there also. And that was kind of my plan that I really wanted to attack there.
Yeah. And on to the ninth round, you went with Jakob Poeltl. So another center that doesn't give you threes. So your traditional kind of center. I don't know. He was a little bit meh last year. He was sort of good, but not really. And Toronto were the same. They're sort of that. I think they now have embraced that rebuild kind of mentality, but they're a little bit like the Lakers or, I don't know, these teams that just find it, I think, really hard to tear it down. And they're probably in that situation now with RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, Scotty Barnes. So they've got some nice young pieces there. And Poeltl is their starting center. Probably doesn't fit their timeline necessarily, but should still start and play big minutes this year. Do you think a trade is coming for him at some point, or are they just going to roll with him as their starting center?
I think we'll see a trade this year. I'm not sure where. And honestly, in hindsight, I wish I would have went with Derek Lively here. That's kind of the pick I would have liked, even though, you know, he has the, he's the sexy guy right now. Everybody wants him to talk about him after the playoff run and whatnot. Sometimes that kind of influences fantasy managers in a bad way, but he fell to a good spot. Same with Isaiah Hartenstein. So maybe I would have taken this one back, but I really just wanted another big who I trusted and felt was safe. Last year was a very unique year in Toronto, where the whole OG, the whole Pascal Siakam, what's going to happen here, what's going to go. And I got to think that plays into it a lot. So I think they have a lot of fun pieces, but they're also a pretty bad team. I think there's kind of embrace that. So I do expect him to get dealt, which is always concerning. When he was with San Antonio, his final season, that was the concern about drafting. It was like, okay, he's starting here, we're good. If he signs that extension, you're great. If he gets dealt, you could be screwed depending on where he lands. So I think at least I'll get up until the trade deadline out of him, and I'll get good value there. I'll get those rebounds. Maybe I had tanking free throws in the back of my head because I'm like, hey, the rest of my team can't shoot foul shots. Let's get another guy who just sucks at them also. So
yeah
it's a boring pick. It can be. It's just kind of bland. I wish I would have went in a different direction, but I was kind of locked in on kind of taking him there in the ninth round.
Yeah, and I think it is one of those picks. I don't think it's a bad pick, but it's not a good pick. It's just, it's a pick. He was 91st last year, 11-9 with 1.5 blocks. I mean, that's realistic again. As long as he's starting and playing sort of upwards of 26, 27 minutes, He's going to get you a double-double. He's always going to get you two combined steals and blocks, two to 2.5, and can even get some sneaky assist value from the center spot if they run the offense through him a little bit. So, yeah, look, it's a fine pick. Jaden Ivey, you went with your next pick. So he's – I just wrote his player outlook, actually. So I have his stats and everything in my head. I suppose if you look at rank alone, he hasn't been good because he's like outside the top 250 in each of his 2 years. But that's factoring in percentages, turnovers, as I said, those guard rookie kind of stats that typically are not impressive. But outside of that, I thought he finished his rookie year strongly. Last year, he was a bit up and down. The concern, obviously, with Detroit, as we sort of said with Duren, is that they have brought in Hardaway and Beasley and Tobias Harris, and Ron Holland was drafted. So do they view Ivy as that player who can step in alongside Cade as a reliable three-point threat? Because by bringing in all those players, that might tell you that they don't think Ivy can be that guy.
Yeah, I think they'll get every chance to in. It's been just a very, very weird start to his career. Last year there was kind of a free Jaden Ivey because they just would not start him or give him big minutes or anything. And he's a young guy. I think that has to mess with him a little bit. And again, maybe I put too much stock into this, but J.B. Bickerstaff's there now. Who has he coached the past couple of years together? Darius Garland and Spider Mitchell, Donovan Mitchell together. So two guards back there got them to work together. I can see kind of the same thing here. If I'm trusting somebody to kind of bring it out of them, I can really see him and Cage long-term working together. Do I think this is kind of like the, hey, if he doesn't do well this year, is his career doomed? No. Is there going to be a fresh start somewhere else? Is it going to be needed? Absolutely. I think this is the last chance to really make a true go of it in Detroit. It's a very fair point bringing in everybody that they brought in, but I think we're going to see the Cage-Jaden stance really kind of be given, and I'm glad Monty's not there for it. I'm kind of putting trust into the new coaching staff to kind of get the most out of them. So, yeah, it's the one thing I'll say is drafting Scoot, drafting Yaka, and then drafting Ivy back-to-back-to-back. There's some risks there. You're hoping that two of them kind of hit, and, I think they can, but I'm also projecting steps forward for both Scoot and Ivy, so it does kind of make me nervous, I can't lie.
Jeremy Grant, I mentioned him. He is still in Portland. You took him in the 11th round. Again, not a sexy pick, not a flashy pick, but in terms of per-game value, I mean, he usually would sort of bust through this area. Last year was not great. The concern is there that they shut him down again if he's still in Portland for the last whatever month because of a hamstring. But I think at this point you could take him and he's proven he can be a top 70, top 80 player. So there's a few rounds of upside here. Do you think they end up dealing him this year?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he wasn't traded, to be honest. But I think ever since we saw him leave Denver and kind of get like a real chance, we've seen him just be a bucket getter. He's averaged around 20 points per game for four straight seasons. He's shot more than 40% from 3-point range over the past 2 years. So like he's somebody that, you know, he's just going to get me those buckets. And I think that's going to translate no matter what team he's on.
Yeah, I don't think we need to sort of discuss him too much because we know who he is. Vince Williams, who you took with your last pick. So he's one of the guys that benefited greatly last year from the issues they had in Memphis with injuries to players. And he stepped into a role which coming into the season, they probably didn't envisage him having. But it puts him in a really good position this year to have a role, despite the fact that the Grizzlies will have all of their guys back. I think he proved that he can be a consistent producer at the NBA level. What do you think his role looks like with everyone back?
Yeah, I think he's going to play a big role. You know, for the longest time, there was thought it was going to be Zaire Williams who's going to kind of take over that role. Mm. Once Dylan Brooks left, who's going to kind of fill that void at small forward? And I think they kind of found the answer last year. So I know the team loves him. They love the way that he kind of earned that contract. So, yeah, I think he's going to have a big role. He's going to be a lockdown defender. He loves taking on those challenges. I wanted to kind of get some more steals on my team. And I felt, you know, at the end of the draft, I was looking at Amen Thompson. I was looking at Dyson Daniels. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be a homer one more time here. I wasn't able to get John Moran. I couldn't get Desmond Bane. Damn it. I'm going to take another Grizzly. So let's go with Vince Williams. So, yeah, I think he's going to play a big role for them. Offense is going to kind of take a step back. He's going to be maybe the fourth, fifth option most nights, but that's more than okay, especially in the last round here where I could get him. I'm drafting for that defense.
So that's your team. But one guy I wanted to mention, and I mentioned I would want to talk about him, and I think I just want to talk about him on as many podcasts as I can. The guy who went next, so after Vince Williams, was Dyson Daniels, who... we know he was traded to Atlanta, and is he going to start? Isn't he? I hope he starts. But were you considering him here, like ahead of Vince Williams? And what do you think? Well, are you as high on him as I'm? Probably stupidly high, and it'll probably come back to bite me. But are you high on him for this season?
I am, honestly. Whenever the trade happened, my buddy, who's a Lakers fan, and we already know how Lakers fans are, he's like, yep. And they wanted Austin Reeves for him, haha. And they drafted, they thought they traded this guy. I'm like, listen, Dyson Daniels is a dude. He is really, really, really good. I'm super high on him. I like the fit there with Trey. He is just a defensive monster. I just want him to be able to get a jump shot. That's all I want him to get. if he gets a jump shot, he is taking a next step forward. I do think he's going to start. I think he's going to play big minutes for them because the Hawks are kind of like, okay, like, we got the first pick. We kind of got some draft picks. We traded DJ. We've been stuck in the middle here. We got a nice core with Trey and Jalen. So, yeah, let's just kind of roll them out there. Clint Capella's last year. Let's, you know, get rid of him. So it's going to be like, hey, guys, let's earn your spot, see what you can do. And I really think Dyson has the chance to kind of take a starting spot and just run forward with it.
Yeah, I really hope so. I think he's looked good at the Olympics and in the pre-game, the warm-up games, that sort of thing. And he's for me, yeah, I still think that jump shot, whether it's three-pointer, mid-range, is still something that needs to be worked on, obviously. But for me, what's been the most encouraging sign is the fact that he hasn't been afraid to go to the basket to take a shot. If it's there, he takes it. And I'm hoping that Atlanta are sort of that mindset where they encourage him to see play what's in front of him. If the drive is there, take it. If the three-point is there, take it. Because I think it just the improvement that we've seen as an Australian fan from the last time he played for us to now, that improvement in his ability to score in various ways is pretty incredible. So I'm hoping that he can continue to take those steps forward. And getting him in the last round. I mean, do you think? I mean, I'm hyping him a lot. I don't know if other analysts will, but do you think his ADP? How high would you be willing to take him? Is he a last round target, or would you be comfortable taking him in sort of the 10th round?
I think depending on my team build and what I need, I'd be comfy taking him in the 10th round, especially as we get closer to draft season. I think we're going to see more and more hype start up on him. You're going to hear beat reporters coming back and be like, hey, Hawks are really big on him. They felt great about that deal they did with New Orleans. And you think about it, you know, when he was in New Orleans, there's a lot of mouths to feed there. So he got drafted right away knowing he's going to be taking a back seat there. Where in Atlanta, they're still, you know, they have Trae Young, they have Jalen Johnson, absolutely. But, you know, it's more open for him to kind of really be able to take a big role offensively for them. And again, I absolutely love his defense so much. So I do think I'd be comfortable taking him in the 10th, 11th round. And I think by the part of draft season, we're going to see him live in that 11th round range.
No, all great stuff. I think that, I mean, that's your team. I guess overall, well, it's a mock draft, so it is what it is. But would you say you're happy with your team? Would you have, I mean, you sort of indicated that like the Poeltl pick and maybe not super exciting. Like, would there be anything you'd change or pretty happy with the build?
I'm happy with the build. I'd probably swap out Poeltl with, again, Derek Lively if I could do it again. But this is a very me team. This is very on brand for the way that I kind of draft, where I want scorers and I feel like I was able to kind of get some high level scorers. I want people who are going to kind of bounce back, that I feel like there's good value in there. I like taking a mix of safe guys, which I feel like I did with Jamal Murray, with Brandon Ingram there, even Poeltl to some extent. And that allows me to take some risk for some guys that I'm projecting to take a next step. But if they don't, it's okay, because I already built in some safety there with those other picks. So this is a very, very neat team, and I'm very, very happy with it. You know, I was expecting somebody to drop in the chat like, hey, let's just play this out. And usually I'm like, mock drafts or mock drafts. But somebody said, let's play this out. I'd be like, you know what? I really like this team. I think I'd be more than happy playing this one out. So.
Yeah. No, I think most people have been pretty happy. Dan Titus was an auto draft, so he wasn't super, super happy with his team. But but that happens. So look, I mean, that sort of covers everything. But one thing I just want to mention before I let you go, is because it's relevant, is the Olympics. So Olympics are going on at the moment. USA men's team, men's and women's are both undefeated. I guess just quickly starting with the men's, the US rightfully are the favourites and I think should probably win it. But do you see anyone challenging them, given they've brought their A squad this year?
So I don't really think anybody's going to challenge them. And I am as far as a kind of like, yeah, USA person as they're going. But like, it's just the talent level and how deep they are, the ability just to kind of mix and match from Jason Tatum not playing at all the first game to starting the second game. Like, it's just an embarrassment of riches that they have. So, and for both the men and the women, the two teams I liked the most going in was US and France. I think France is just like fantastic. On the women's side, my favorite basketball player, men or women, is Marine Johannes. She's absolutely phenomenal. Just kind of watching that. And then it scares me so much if I'm a player and I'm like, okay, I know that I just have to have my shot working because I can't go in the paint against Wemby and Rudy. I can't do it. So just kind of like that twin tower that they have there would make me really nervous. But yeah, I think US is the rightful favorites, and I don't really see that anybody being able to stop them, especially with the way that LeBron is kind of playing that Draymond Green role in the Warriors offense, but he's playing it like 10 times to the ability that Draymond can because he's LeBron. It's just, you know, it's just not fair. So yeah, I don't see anybody slowing them down.
And on the women's, I wanted to finish on the women's team. And yes, I think the US, they're just, I mean, I watched a bit of the game this morning, our time, and Belgium hung around, but US just continuously came down and just hit bucket after bucket. And my favorite player who plays for Germany is Satu Sabally, and she's been good. And I think given she hasn't played this year because of a shoulder injury, and she's basically carried Germany to two victories from two games. And I think they play the US in the next game. Is that right?
I believe that's accurate, yes.
Any chance?
I mean, I don't want to say no, but, you know, Satu, she's one of my favorite players too. Go Oregon Ducks, her, Sabrina, you know, I do love them both. So I think they'll be able to keep it close. You know, I think ultimately U.S. will win. Belgium was able to kind of keep it close today. U.S. will end up winning by 13 points. They're just too good. They're just, you know, inside out. Whenever you have four Las Vegas Aces on your team, you have three Mercury, you have one arguably greatest player of all time, Diana Shirazi, the greatest player right now, Asia Wilson. Her and Brianna Stewart on the court together is just not fair. I really think that the only team that can give them a real run is France. Just France is just unbelievable. They have players just saying, hey, we're not playing in the WNBA because we're going to get ready for this. This is like our number one right here. And yeah, they're fantastic. That's the matchup I can't wait to see. But yeah, if you know, Satu ended up leading her squad to a win over USA, I wouldn't be sad because it'd be super cool. And I love seeing upsets.
Yeah, no, I just like watching her play, and hoping to, when I'm in Dallas next year, I'm really hoping to get to a couple of Dallas Wings games. So looking forward to that. Look, thanks again for jumping on. Let people know where they can find you and what work you've got. We are in a bit of a dead zone for fantasy at the moment, but what have you got going on?
Yeah, so you can find me at The Athletic, and you can find me at Winsider. Winsider, I'm doing a lot of WNBA pieces, doing a lot of features on players, including Satu Sabally's teammate, J.C. Sheldon, the rookie out of Ohio State. I have a big key for each team for the second half of the season as the Olympic break winds down. And I have a pretty cool article coming out on Isabel Harrison, who is coming back from her second ACL injury with Chicago Sky. So you can find those at Winsider. And then for The Athletic, I'm turning out some content, not really basketball related, but I have a fun Olympics piece that should be dropping here in the next few days. So a little tease there, but yeah, check that out on The Athletic, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Sounds good. Follow Michael. I haven't got it in front of me, but it's just at Michael Waterloo on Twitter. Just look for the Anna Kendrick pictures. You'll find him.
Exactly. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. At Michael Waterloo on Twitter, at Hi, My Name Is Lou on Instagram. And yeah, behind my shoulder, you can see a picture of Anna Kendrick hanging up. So Anna Kendrick for life.
That's right. No, thanks again for jumping on. Follow me at AdamKing91. Follow us at FBI Basketball. Give this video a like, a subscribe, a thumbs up. All of that stuff helps build our brand. And look, really appreciate everyone tuning in. I know we're still rolling out the draft only leagues. So if I've just joined one, which I think B-Dub will be sort of sending out the link today. He sent it to me early to make sure that I get into it because I'm usually late on those. So we're still rolling out leagues, and then as we get closer to the season, we'll have all of our redraft leagues, and Matt Lawson's obviously got about 2,000 dynasty leagues running as well. So a lot of stuff over in our Discord server. Again, thank you for tuning in, and until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.